this hour we have a military man here, and one that can write. So don't mess with a military man, as the song goes. We're excited to have him on. Brent Magnuson. He has authored a new book called Roger Up. The tagline is "The Mission Ready Blueprint to Crush the Morning, Own the Day, and Become the Best Version of You." He's new to the show. Very happy to have him. Brent, welcome to the Power Hour.
Thanks, Daniel. Great to be on. Great to meet you.
Yes, very good. We haven't met you. Our audience doesn't know you from Adam, probably. Just give us a little background. Tell us a little bit about Brent.
Well, I'm a Gemini. Enjoy the long walks on the beach.
No, oh, my gosh. I'm going to like you. I can tell already. Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. I was born and raised in the Chicagoland area and grew up playing soccer. And when I realized that that dream of being the next Cristiano Ronaldo or the next Lionel Messi wasn't going to happen, with the vast majority of the men serving in the military, my family, my dad being one of those, I always knew the Army was going to be a backup plan if soccer didn't work out. And I'm glad it was, because it's one of the best decisions I made. I enlisted in 96. And got to serve with a bunch of great people, got to deploy to some interesting places around the world. And after getting out, I became entrepreneurial and have always been writing. Never really knew if I was going to publish anything or not. And this book came about, and we just had to put it out. And so far, so good. It's been out for a little over a month now, and it's doing great. We hit the number one bestseller list on Amazon, and everything's going really well right now.
Why did you write this book? What inspired you?
To be honest, I wrote this book for the 17 or 18-year-old version of me. I don't know the specific demographic of your listening audience, but if there are any 17 or 18-year-olds out there, I'm sure they're embracing their inner knucklehead. I know I was at that age. And,
I still am.
Yeah, me too, at 44. But at 17 or 18 to 22, those are very, very impressionable years. And I was really glad I had the military. And I meet a lot of people when I'm out speaking, which I'm not doing much of right now with the COVID-19, but out speaking and doing a lot of Zoom chats and stuff like that. I meet a lot of people. I get a lot of messages and emails about productivity and morning routines and a lot of the stuff we cover in the book. And I think there's a missing piece for a lot. I'm speaking from a male perspective. I think there's a missing piece for a lot of guys that missed out on that really disciplined 18 to 22, 18 to 23 time frame that the military gives you. And I'm not saying the military is perfect in every way, shape, and form, but it certainly is as close to perfect at getting you disciplined. And I think that's one of the biggest missing pieces when it comes to overall productivity.
Okay, well, let's talk about the military. A lot of former military people we've had on, or even current, they would say, whatever you do, don't let your children go into the military. But you had a different experience, it sounds like. Well, tell me, would you recommend your grandson or son going into the military? How do you feel about it?
Asked that question the other day. I was on the phone actually with my good friend Jay Redman. He's a retired SEAL. He wrote the book.
Yeah, we interviewed him. Yeah, we interviewed him.
Yeah. Jay's a good dude and a good friend, and he wrote the foreword to my book, and I'm grateful he did that. And him and I were talking the other day, and he has a few kids that are of military enlisting age, we'll say, and I had been asked that that morning, and I got on the phone with him, and we were just having a normal conversation, and I asked him that same question, and we kind of went back and forth on, and I think that all comes down to the specific experience. I mean, if you take a guy like Jay, who was for the better part of two decades operating at the tip of the spear with the SEAL teams, you see from the deployment perspective how much you're away from your family. And when you see people die and you go to a lot of bad places, and there's some underlying issues in the military that are still out there. There's some military sexual trauma that happens. And I have a stepdaughter. That's the only child I have. She's 9 years old. And for me personally, she's not going to go in. I served so she doesn't have to. If she absolutely wanted to, I would not hold her back, but I would certainly, knowing what I know from my time in the military, I would certainly steer her towards a position or a job, and even in a branch of the military, that would be the least likely for her to end up in very bad situations.
Okay, well, let's just have that conversation. Let's pretend somebody's listening. They're 17 years old. They can't wait till they're 18 so they can enlist. Let's pretend you're having that conversation now. What would you say to that person?
I would say go get a gun and do some good for God and country. If you're a single guy and you don't have any kids, right now, especially in the special forces community, specifically in the Army, we can't even find enough guys at local high schools that can pass a PT test or pass a drug test. I had this conversation on a podcast last week that right now it is 150 times harder for an 18-year-old male to get into the Army than it is college. And most people with a college background would say, well, that's impossible. Well, let me just quickly explain. You cannot get in. And by college, I mean you can go right now to your two-year university. I'm not talking about a full-ride scholarship. You can go to your two-year college and sign up for classes. And you're good to go. If you smoke pot, you can go to that college and sign up. You can't go to the military. If you have flat feet, you can go to that college. You can't go to the Army. If you have asthma, if you have bad vision, if you're taking heroin, if you're on a X amount of prescription medication, if you have a criminal record, you can go to those colleges on all those issues. You can't go to the Army on even one of them. And that's with getting waivers and everything else. And aside from all those things, we can't even find enough guys, again, speaking about males, 18-year-old high school males, we can't get enough guys that can knock out a certain amount of push-ups in 2 minutes, a certain amount of sit-ups in 2 minutes, and run a flipping mile and a half in less than 13 minutes. We can't find enough guys just to do that, let alone get guys into, and I mean, I'm just talking basic entry-level jobs in the military. I'm not talking about, you know, combat engineers or rangers or, you know, special forces or, Delta Force or whatever. I'm talking about just getting guys to get in and pass a PT test and a drug test.
What does that say? What does that say about us as a society? I mean, that doesn't bode well.
It doesn't. And, you know, that word snowflake gets thrown around an awful lot. And some people hate it, and some people like to throw it around. And unfortunately, the vast majority of people that hate that word probably in some way either are that word or know someone close to them that's that word. And, you know, I have some friends. I'm proud to say I have some friends in their mid-90s that were in World War II, guys I see at the VFW once in a while. And that generation is gone. I mean, we're hanging on to just a few of them, and just their mentality, just their toughness, just their discipline, just their work ethic, that's gone. And we are in a whole new era right now, and it's tough. It's tough finding people that want to serve. And when you see all the stuff that goes on, when you have, I mean, openly, you have Marxist organizations out there, you know, talking about defunding the police, and it disencourages young men and women to want to join the military. It disencourages young men and women to want to serve their country or serve their police department because they're looked at as pariah. They're looked at as bad because they want to serve and be patriotic. And it's just crazy to me.
I want to go a little different direction with this question. I think it fits, but it just on a broad, take it out of the military for a second. So take it, you're looking at people going into military, they can't do push-ups, what have you. You compare it to, you know, 90-year-old World War II veterans. My grandfather was a World War II veteran. I've noticed this on older generation, like my mother-in-law. She's in her late 70s. My mother's dead now, but my mother-in-law, we have conversations where I tell her, you know, you're concerned about America? Wait till your generation is gone. And I don't know if it's, you said it, work ethic, discipline, your understanding of what it means to be a responsible adult, all these things, it's like totally eroded. Her perspective on all those things and what those things mean are totally different than a 20-year-old, 25-year-old, 30, 40-year-old today. in the rest of America. It's a completely different experience. Comment on that.
Absolutely. I'm the same way. I mean, my dad's 78. He served in the Air Force from 60 to 64, and he's just a different breed, you know. I lost my mom, too, so I'm sorry to hear that you lost your mom. But
well, thank you.
These people are a different breed, and they were raised a different way. Their standards...
What is the difference? I mean, what is the difference, Brett? Why is it different? Why are they different? Why are these kids like snowflakes? Why?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with, unfortunately, technology, and we're using technology right now. You're on the other side of the country. We're talking on a cell phone with perfect reception. That's fantastic. They didn't have that in World War II, but
no.
I think the biggest thing, it starts at the home. And, you know, I talk about this concept a lot about sheep, sheepdog, and wolves. And, you know, roughly 80% of the population are sheep. 10% are wolves, those are the really bad ones, and then 10% are the sheepdogs, protectors. And those 80% plus that are sheep, they're going to continue to produce sheep. You know, if you want to compare it to humans, you could say the bully. The bully is the wolf, and the person that was bullied is the sheep. And they were probably bullied when they went home and their parents didn't do anything about it or didn't know how to handle it. And unfortunately, their parents' parents were probably bullied. And their kids are probably going to be bullied. Just like the bully is a wolf. Their parents were probably wolves. And that bully, his kids are probably going to be wolves and bullies. And the biggest thing is with these sheep is you don't have to be a sheep. If you are, that's fine. But you can start adopting some of these sheepdog qualities and traits and being more prepared and being more well-read and more focused on your personal development. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about you. We all get the same 24 hours in the day. We all get the same 1,440 minutes, the same 86,400 seconds. What we do with that precious time is on us. You know, and I'm not going to be that guy, whether I go tomorrow or in 50 years when I'm 94. I'm not going to be that guy on his deathbed filled with regret, wishing I had chased my dreams and lived life to the fullest, lived an extraordinary life. And I don't think a lot of the younger generation looks at things that way and feels that way. And I think
that's
a big
shame.
Problem.
You mentioned, I like that, sheep, sheepdog, and wolves. Talk about the sheepdog's role. What is the sheepdog's role? Who is a sheepdog? I'm fascinated by these dogs here.
No, yeah, it comes from, I have to give credit to another Army guy, a retired Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. He wrote a phenomenal book called On Combat. And his idea is that 80% of the population are sheep, 10% are wolves, and 10% are sheepdogs. And at the end of the day, when we boil everything down and we put this from animals into human perspective, the sheepdog is always the most prepared. The sheepdog is always the most trained, the most well-read, the best equipped to handle a bad situation, the most confident that he or she has put in all the hard work. And that wolf is going to show up. That wolf, and it may not be that kid on the playground when you're in third or fourth grade trying to take your lunch money. That wolf may show up in the form of cancer. That wolf may show up in the form of a loss of your business or a divorce. I mean, hell, that wolf can show up in so many different forms, and the more prepared you are for it, the better off you're going to be. The sheep hopes every day that nothing bad happens. And the interesting dynamic about that is the sheepdog actually resembles the wolf. If you can picture a Belgian Malinois, that beautiful, smaller version of a German Shepherd that's probably the most effective military working dog we have, and then you picture a wolf, they look very similar. Same type of hair, same type of fangs. And when the wolf doesn't come around for a while, the sheep start to actually regret the sheepdog. But in the back of their head, they know that wolf could show up at any minute. And it's very much like what's going on right now with the police. There are some bad cops out there. There's some bad sheepdog out there. There's bad eggs in every. There's bad accountants. There's bad doctors. I mean, there's bad guys at Delta Force that just slipped through the cracks and you don't know how they got there. But it's recognizing that the vast majority, 90%+ of the police, 90%+ of sheepdogs are good, are protectors, are doing the right thing. And where they don't seek out violence like the wolf, they welcome it because they're prepared for it. And if the sheep can start taking a look at some of the real simple qualities that the sheepdog has, always being prepared, always up early, well-trained, well-read, good with money, confident, unselfish, things are going to get a lot better for that sheep.
It was interesting something you said about the sheep begin, if the wolves don't show up, the sheep begin to regret the sheepdog or feel spite towards the sheepdog. That's very interesting what you just said.
Oh, yeah. They start to resent the sheepdog because they've now gotten complacent. They've become confident enough, even though they're sheep, that, wow, okay, big bad wolf hasn't showed up in a few weeks.
Why do I need to listen to you? Yeah. Why do I need your example? Yeah, why do Grandma, I don't care about your work ethic. I don't give a damn about your perceived attitudes about the how people should act. Who cares what you think, Grandma? Kind of the same thing.
Absolutely. And what happened to George Floyd is absolutely terrible. That cop should be thrown in jail for the rest of his life. He deserves his day in court like every citizen of this country does. But, I mean, anyone that thinks what happened there was anything other than an atrocity, regardless of George Floyd's past, is wrong. That was a really terrible thing. But I have news here. 90 to 95% of the police officers out there are fantastic, hardworking people with day-to-day issues just like you and I have, yet they have to walk around with a gun and a badge, and depending on where they're working, have to deal. I mean, I live in Chicago. Police officers, some of which I'm friends with and train jujitsu with, I mean, these guys are, I have a few veteran friends that are now police officers in Chicago, and they compare it to Ramadi in 06 or Fallujah. I mean, you're talking about, you know, 15 to 20 shootings, people that are killed in Chicago every weekend. It's terrifying. And
we have about 3-4 minutes before the break. I'll ask you this question, and then on the other side, I want to get more into your book. But here's the issue I have with police, and this is an institutional issue. This is not an individual issue. I mean, everybody agrees, you know, you can't be stepping on people's neck. I mean, that's obvious. Here's the issue I do have with police, especially as opposed to sheriffs. A sheriff is elected by the people, so if you don't like your sheriff, if you don't like the way he does things, then you can get a new sheriff. Police, you can't fire them, you can't whatever, they don't work for you, they're not accountable to the people, they're accountable to the political arm of the mayor or what have you. And when push comes to shove, so many times what we have seen, especially this lockdown order, you know, Shelley Luther in Texas wants to open her business because she's about to go bankrupt. And then the police are there to stop her and pull her into court. They don't go by the Bill of Rights. They don't go by their oath. They go by what their boss tells them. That is the issue that I have with the police. They do not side with the people. They do not work with the people way too much. They work for the system and the political arm. That's my issue. Your comments on that?
My only comment on that is I agree with you 100%.
How do we change that? Because I think that's the institutional problem. I talked to lots of police. I mean, you probably, I believe you talked to more than I do, but when I used to speak out, because I wrote a book about America and I would speak a lot, and they would come up to me and they would tell me these things. They feel like they're trapped. They feel like and you could tell they were good people. They wanted America. They wanted Constitution. They wanted Bill of Rights. I got the impression they felt like they couldn't do any of those things. They were forced in a box, and if they even talked about these things or tried to promote them, that they would be fired. That's the impression I got from them. How do we change that?
I agree. I have a good amount of friends in law enforcement at, again, where I train jujitsu. I have local, we have sheriff, we have state police there, we have a couple guys, we have FBI, Department of Homeland Security. So we get to, at least me and having a public face and having the book out, I get a little more in-depth conversations with these guys than a lot of the folks there that just go to train jiu-jitsu get.
Right.
And they're all saying the same thing. I mean, I know guys personally that have a tremendous amount of leave saved up that have taken it just in Chicago because of how crazy the mayor is and how crazy things are right now. I mean, guys that have served for 10, 12, years and are legitimately concerned about going back to work, because every time they go out, there's people everywhere with cell phones just egging them on to say or do anything wrong. And it's a problem. And from a fundamental, position on how to change that, I honestly don't know. I think that's a much broader issue that needs to be addressed at city levels, but it's certainly a problem, and radical change is needed in that area. Defunding the police is a nightmare. We need them to have more funding and more training. But how that's structured, I honestly don't have a good answer for you.
Well, I kind of put you on the spot even asking you that, but we went down there, so I appreciate you at least taking a stab at it. I think they should be trained in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. That's where I think the training is lacking the most. Your thoughts?
I agree. Just like we don't really have ethics classes anymore.
Right. Civics. And no civics, yeah. No ethics, no logic.
No civics, no ethics. No. I mean, check balancing, how to balance a checkbook is not taught in high school. How to set goals. I mean, two of the most important things you're going to have to carry through the rest of your life. How do you budget your money, and how do you set goals, whether they're short-term, small, or long-term and big? And those things aren't taught. And fundamentally, there are a few things that need to change in police departments across the country, and training is the number one thing. So when I hear about defunding, I just laugh at it, because it's obviously someone who's uneducated on the situation. All these police departments need more funding and more training.
Well, let's get more into your book. We've started. There's a lot of good suggestions in here as I've kind of skimmed through it. And I'm going to start with this 5:30 blueprint. You want me up at 5:30. You got to explain to me why I'm supposed to get up at 5:30 on the other side. Stay tuned. More with Brent Magnuson. Roger Up is the name of the book. Excited to have him. You're listening to the Power Hour. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The PowerMall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food stores are left to eat. Yum!
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Everyone should be pro-life. Joyce was right then. She's still right. Wherever she is, she's right. We should be pro-life. Thepowermall.com, thepowermall.com, 877-817-9829. We've got sales on all the Global Healing Center products, the selenium, the toxidine, the iodine. If you're not getting iodine and selenium from the Power Mall, then where are you getting it? You're certainly not, you're not getting iodine from your food. You live in Iowa? Where are you getting iodine from? I mean, you, if you live on the coast and you eat a lot of seafood, you'll get some, you know, some polluted, bastardized version of iodine. But if you don't, if you're not getting real iodine supplementation, where are you getting it? Oh, and by the way, it's essential. So where are you getting it? Fluoride in your body, bromine, the chlorine in the water. You go swimming and you suck up chlorine in the shower. If you don't have the iodine, you can't counteract those things. It's a good halogen which takes out all those things, binds to it, and detoxifies your thyroid and your pineal gland and helps decalcify. So where are you going to get it? Very important question. On sale at thepowermall.com, 877-817-9829, among many other things. Thank you for your purchases, your prayers, your support, your donations. We're here because of you. We don't, corporations, George Soros doesn't write us a check. We get money from you, and that is the fuel which allows us to talk to people like Brent. So please continue to support us. Buy from the good guys. You need to support us. Independent media is needed for you. If we're not here, who are you going to listen to? You won't have Brent to talk to, that's for sure. 877-817-9829. Okay, we're talking about the book Roger Up. I love the name, Roger Up. Simple, I can remember it. Brent Magnuson, The Mission Ready Blueprint to Crush the Morning, Own the Day, and Become the Best Version of You. Where's the best place for people to get this book, Brent?
Best place right now is Amazon. We still have it. It's still a bit of a patriotic book at its core, so because of the 4th of July, we still have it discounted at $6.69 for the ebook. So, yeah, Amazon's the best place.
Oh, well, very good. Now, I've been flipping through your book. I got it a few days ago, and you want me to get up at 5:30. There's a part of the book called the 5:30 Blueprint, or 0530 Blueprint, if we're going to use military terms. Let's talk about that. Convince me I need to get up at 0530, Brent.
It's cooler if you say 0530.
Okay, 0530. My bad.
Yeah. That's what all the cool kids are saying. So, but yeah, the 0530 Blueprint is, it's a morning routine basically on steroids, if you will. It's, you know, everyone's heard of morning routines. It's by far and away one of the least sexy topics in the book. There's a chapter on becoming Jason Bourne. I think for most of the guys out there, that's a lot more appealing than another morning routine. But the bottom line is most people don't have a morning routine. At least they don't have an effective one. If you call getting up and going haphazardly through the morning, you wake up at a different time every day, you hit snooze a few times, you don't have much direction, you don't have a plan, no blueprint, you stumble into the kitchen, you get some coffee, you don't really know what you're going to do, and then maybe you take a shower, maybe you don't, you hope you get to work on time, maybe you stop for some crappy fast food, and now next thing you know, it's 9 or 9:30, and you're just kind of going through the motions. Every single successful, super successful person I know has a morning routine and is locked into it.
All right. What should it include? What should I do in my morning routine if I'm going to be more successful?
Well, the number one thing is you don't have to do what I say. The number one thing is to just absolutely have a plan and know whatever time you get up. I get up at 5:30 because for me, it's a half an hour earlier than I used to get up. And I find that that's around the time where the sun is coming up. I like to be up before the sun, just like in the military, we like to be up before the enemy. Even though a lot of operations happen in the pitch black of night, being up before the sun's a good thing. That big ball of fire, 93 million miles away, is my most consistent competition. And I'm 44 years old, and every single day that I have been up, that sun has got up. It doesn't matter if there's rain or snow or whatever. That sun is up every single day. It's that consistent. It's the best competition you can possibly have. And if you start looking at that sun as your competition, your enemy, your accountability, whatever you want to call it, compete with the sun. And if you're up with it or up before it, you're already ahead of half of your competition. But having that plan is everything. I mean, Napoleon Hill said, some people dream of success while others wake up and work hard at it. And having that plan, the first 30 minutes of the day is everything. What you do in the first 30 minutes of the day dictates the whole rest of the day. And not just for you. It dictates your mood, your positivity, your productivity, how your encounters with other people, with your family goes, how you are at work. And just
all right, okay. What do you,
that,
all right. What do you do? You're up at 5:30. Tell us what you do in these 30 minutes.
Yeah, so it's very, very clearly laid out in the book. This is out of all the research I've done and all the people I've talked to and met with and interviewed. For me, the perfect morning routine is I wake up at 5:30, and the first thing I do is smile. I don't get out of bed. I just smile for 15 seconds. Even if I had a crappy day the day before, if I didn't get the best night's sleep, 5:30, I wake up and I smile like I just fell in love again, like I just hit the lottery. I smile big for 15 seconds. And even if the last thing I want to do is get out of bed, my body and my psychology is tricked. And somehow my psyche is like, okay, well, I don't know what the hell's going on here, but I'm smiling. So something must be going good. We should probably get out of bed. The next thing I do is I make the bed. And I know so many people that can't remember the last time they read a book, and even more so can't remember the last time they made the bed. It's so important because it's one of the things we call in the Army a task completion. It's one little nugget of completing a task and saying, okay, hey, I got this done. That's one thing I can notch up on the belt. You know, a former head of JSOC, he was a Navy Admiral, William McRaven.
What is JSOC? What is JSOC?
Joint Special Operations Command.
Okay.
And so he was a Navy SEAL, and he headed a Navy Admiral, and he headed that. He has an amazing quote. He also has a great book out called Make the Bed. But he has a great quote, and it says, if you make your bed every morning, you will have accomplished the first task of the day. It will give you a small sense of pride, and it will encourage you to do another task and another. By the end of the day, one task completed will have turned into many tasks completed. Making your bed will also reinforce the fact that little things in life matter. And something as simple as getting up and smiling and getting up and making the bed, the first two things you do. And then the third thing I do is I slam about 16 ounces of room temperature water And from there on out, I have my, you know, my things I do. But those three things are non-negotiable. I treat them like war. I wake up, I smile, I make the bed, I make it well, and I slam 16 ounces of room temperature water.
Okay, your next thing is diaphragm breathing and priming hard for 60 seconds. Explain that.
Yeah, I mean, diaphragm breathing is it doesn't happen overnight, and I go into some detail in the book. Basically, the best way to look at it is if you look at your diaphragm from the underneath of your pecs to the bottom of your belly button, and look at it as like a Coke bottle or a Pepsi bottle. The bottom third of that bottle is all stale, stagnant air, and you've been sleeping for 6, 7, 8, 9 hours. And that stagnant air needs to be blown out. This is also a phenomenal technique you can use for anyone of you, for all of you that enjoy running. Before you go on a run, just blow all that CO2 out. So what I do is I breathe in really hard for 2 seconds and breathe out really hard for 2 seconds. And it's doing a whole bunch of things. One thing it's doing is waking me up, shocking my system in a healthy way. It's getting all the CO2 out. It's enriching my blood with oxygen. It's getting more oxygen into me. It's getting my brain firing. And it's opening up my lungs. And that's another thing that's beneficial in starting off the day.
This is really interesting in relation to these masks. And people, if you wear a mask and now you're breathing the CO2 back in, that can't be good.
I mean, there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of research out there, and there's a few different parties on or sides, I should say, on the mask issue. I wear the mask as little as possible, whether it's this healthy or this unhealthy, or this person hates it, or this person says it might be okay or it might not be okay. For me, I don't like anything obstructing my breathing, and I don't like the idea of rebreathing my own CO2. Now, at what levels is that happening? I'm not smart enough to tell you. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. But
right.
I know that unless I have to wear it, I'm not wearing it.
All right. Then you work out, says, for 12 to 15 minutes. What's a typical workout for you?
Yeah. So it's basically just a Roger Up. I call it the Roger Up workout. And it's very simple. It's nothing hard. I just do basically 100 push-ups in as few sets as possible. My standard is I do 100 push-ups a day, no matter what. Even if there's extra work involved or a walk later in the day or a jiu-jitsu class, 100 push-ups is the bare minimum. That's the standard. It's treated like war. It cannot change. If I have a broken arm, then I've got to figure it out and maybe lean against the sink and do 100 one-arm push-ups. It doesn't matter. It's non-negotiable. So I just try to knock it out as quick as possible. I do that on an empty stomach as well. I just do 100 push-ups in as few sets as possible. I do 100 body squats in as few sets as possible, and then I plank for 3 minutes, and I'm good. And
that's 3 minute plank. That's pretty good.
Well, not consecutively. It depends. I mean, when you first start planking, if you've never done it, your first plank might be 20 seconds, but you keep going as many times as you have to until you've hit a total of 3 minutes.
All right. So somebody, if somebody's 65 listening and they're, you know, hearing all this, gear this down for the 65-year-old who kind of wants to reinvigorate their life, maybe incorporate this. How would they start? Would they just do?
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yeah, my dad's 78, and he doesn't get up and do 100 push-ups, but he does go for a walk. And the idea is just to get moving. The idea is just to do something. You don't have to do push-ups and body squats. People have different abilities. People have injuries. People have all kinds of issues. So if you can't do these things, just get up and move. If you can get off the couch and walk over to the fridge, I promise you, you can walk out the front door and go for a walk. You can go get some sun, and you can just get out for 15, 20, 30 minutes. Take a walk and do it first thing in the morning, because the longer the day goes on, the less likely you are to get these things knocked out.
Very interesting. And then a warm shower, and then the last 30 seconds of a shower turn to ice-cold water. Explain that and why.
Absolutely. I take cold showers every morning because it sucks. And there's no other reason. I on my first.
What are you, some kind of sadomasochist or something? What are you?
No, I'm not. And it's funny because, one of my mentors, Tony Robbins, says that, the first thing he does in the morning is he jumps into a pool at his house of 57-degree water, and he submerges himself. And just like Tony, I'm a big believer in cold water immersion. It works, and I personally believe it should be applied daily. I can't tell you how many people I've turned on to cold showers in the morning, and it's got to be in the hundreds, maybe in the thousands. And it's mind-blowing how beneficial this very simple morning tactic is. And Tony Robbins, he was asked it was a very popular talk show. He was asked about cold showers, and he said, I don't do it because I'm a masochist. I do it because there is nothing that can change everything in your system, like a radical change in temperature. And there's tremendous benefit in cold showers. But for me, I take that cold shower for two reasons. One, because it absolutely sucks, and it's the last thing, especially if it's winter here in Chicago, and I was just under the covers, all nice and toasty, and now I got to get up and enjoy that warm shower and wash up, and then I know I got to turn it all the way right and go freezing cold and teeth chattering, freezing cold for 30 seconds. But I'll tell you what, after that 30 seconds, you feel like the Hulk. You're so ready to crush the day. And just like making the bed, it's another task completed. You just did something that 95% of the other people out there, especially your competition, didn't do. And you're better for it. You're harder for it. And, for me, the more hard stuff I do, the less likely I am to get annoyed or bothered by little things that if I didn't do those hard things would be a big deal.
I like your attitude. It's infectious. It's contagious. Let me tell you a story. You obviously don't know me very well, but, my father, you talk about the slave reparations, the black reparations. Well, my father's not black, but he picked more cotton than just about any black person I know growing up. Where's his check? If you're going to pass out checks anyway, whatever. I digress. Something his uncle told me that always stuck with me. He talked about going in the fields and picking the cotton. Obviously, and you're talking South Carolina, North Carolina, summer, it's miserable. I mean, as miserable can be. He said what he always did in the morning before he went in the field is he would take a cold shower. He would take it, and that always stuck with me. And so, especially, I'm in Missouri, and it's really hot sometimes. If I end on a cold shower, I don't sweat near as much. It's not the heat doesn't, it's counterintuitive, but the heat does not bother me as much like the whole day or like 5-6 hours. It's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the benefits of cold showers are, they're endless. I mean, it's again, and I'm not a doctor, so, I don't prescribe anything. I just tell people what's worked for me and what's worked for so many people I know. And, like guys like Jason Redmond, I don't think he takes cold showers. And if you're a Navy SEAL or a former Navy SEAL out there, you get a pass. If you did anything in the military that required you to be essentially tortured in that cold ocean every morning, you get a pass. You don't have to do cold showers. You've already earned your keep. But for the rest of us, go ahead. I'm sorry.
There's a lot in this book. I want to get to it. So go ahead. Finish your thought. I just want to move forward.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was done with that.
Okay. So one of the things, and I want to move subjects, is then writing down your top 10 goals.
Absolutely.
So writing down your top 10 goals from the day. I think that's outstanding. Are these the top 10 things you want to get done in that day, or like, are they long-term goals, or just for this day, I want to do these 10 things? How do you do it?
So there's a whole chapter on goal setting, and I'll be brief with it. So for me personally, the most two effective ways that I've seen goal setting, and having studied under Brian Tracy, who's got a phenomenal book called Goals on goal setting. He's one of those guys like a Jim Rohn or a Tony Robbins or a Zig Ziglar. He's just spent his entire life focused on how to be as effective as possible when it comes to setting goals. And, his research shows that 97% of people do not write down their goals. And writing them down is arguably the most important thing you can do. And yes, you have to take action. You have to state them in the now. But at the end of the day, writing down your goals. And if you're writing down your goals, don't just say, I want to lose 50 pounds. Say, I weigh 183 pounds on November 12th. That's 26 pounds less than I am now. Or I earned $400,000 by May 1st, 2021. And then out of those 10 goals I write, I'll pick one and I'll break that down with at least 10 things I can do to accomplish that. And I have those goals that I look at every day. And the art of writing them down, it really plays on your mind. And when you write them down and you look at them at night before bed, within an hour of going to sleep, your subconscious actually works on those goals while you're sleeping. It's the best ROI you've ever got for writing down something. And for me personally, it's been massive. I have two things in the book. I suggest that people write down their top 10 daily goals, have it somewhere they can look at and see. And I know one guy, a younger guy that we were mentoring, and he carried it around with him. And then you also should write out a top 100 goals list, the top 100 things you want to accomplish in life. And most people I talk to have never done that. And I lay out the very effective way you can go about doing that. List your 100 goals. I break them down into different categories like adventure, fitness, finances, travel, health. And I actually list out about 50 of my top 100 goals, things I want to accomplish in life. And when you actually have them written down and you can see them, they become more real. And for me, writing it down is the most important thing.
I think there's a science when you write. You mentioned it. When you write something, it's more than just writing. It connects with your brain, with your, like your whole being is connected in that writing and that act, and it really means something. It's so much more than just writing words down.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I broke down in the book, you know, for the longest time, there were two studies about goal setting. One was a 1979 Yale University study, 79 Harvard study, and another one was a 1953 study from Yale. And both of them suggested that, you know, the Harvard one was interesting. 84% of the class had no goals, 13% had goals but were not written down, and 3% had clear written goals with a specific plan to accomplish them. And then in 1989, 10 years after, they went back to Harvard and visited the graduating class, and they found that the 13% of the class who had goals were actually earning on average twice as much as the 84% that didn't. And then they found that the 3% who had clear, specific written goals were earning on average 10 times more than the other 97% combined.
Wow.
And for a long time, we believed those goals, but we actually found out a really cool company called the Company Consultant Debunking Unit. They did a thorough investigation and found there was actually no evidence supporting those. But this awesome lady, Dr. Gail Matthews, did research from the Dominican University of California, and she found that actually that study was accurate. And the three biggest things from her conclusions were the positive effect of written goals. It was 100% supported, and the people who wrote down their goals accomplished significantly more than those that did not write down their goals. So write down your goals and you'll be good to go.
Well, even if you think, well, I don't know if I can do it, whatever, just write it down. You think you have this conversation in your mind, just write the darn thing down, and you know, at least you've energetically started on that path, right?
Oh yeah, and if you buy the paperback version or if you see the ebook, I mean, in the paperback on page 65 is an actual page that just has your vision exercise, top 10 goals. It's got 1 through 10 with 10 lines. Just write them down.
And if I'm right here in the book. This
yeah,
is
right
great.
There, page 65.
This is great.
And if you're new to it, just remember to start every goal with I. Don't start it with, you know, lose weight or, you know, get ripped or meet a hot chick or some of the stuff that we've seen in some of the training.
It's too vague. You need specifics. You need something
very
specific.
Very specific. You know, I launched my YouTube channel on June 1st, 2021. I earn X amount of money by this date. Be very, very specific.
This book, ladies and gentlemen, this is like, here, you're 17, 18 years old, kind of like you said, here's some advice for life, but you're 40, you're 60, you're whatever, it's the same thing. This is, you want to improve your life, you want to empower your life, and this is really, you got a variety of subjects. I mean, how to meet women, how to get a date, the 30-second elevator pitch. Give us some info. We got about 2-3 minutes. The 30-second elevator pitch. Give us a summary of that.
Yeah, I mean, so the 30-second elevator pitch essentially gets its name because that's the amount of time on average it takes to ride in an elevator from the bottom floor to the top floor in a building. At the end of the day, it's your resume. It's your 30 seconds or less to tell someone about you. And you know, basically you're selling yourself. You know, Joe Rogan, a famous podcaster, says, you know, be the hero of your own movie. And this is basically, the 30-second elevator pitch is basically your 30-second movie trailer. It's, Hi, I'm Brent Magnuson. This is why I'm awesome. This is why I'm attracted to the marketplace. This is how I can benefit you. And this is why, you know, you should date me, or this is why you should hire me. And it's that quick bullet points. It's 30 seconds. And
it's important to be able, it's important to be able to do that, because just like writing it down, you've solidified it in your mind and you can articulate it with your voice. There's power in that.
Well, there is. And especially in this very competitive marketplace, regardless of what industry you're in. I mean, there's right now, there's a guy or a gal that's interviewing for the same job you are next week, and he or she is working on their elevator pitch. They're remembering when they walk in and meet the person that's interviewing them, they're remembering they have to smile, but not too big, about a third of a smile. They're remembering to keep really good posture. They're remembering to have a firm handshake, even though handshaking isn't really relevant right now. They're remembering to keep solid eye contact. They're remembering to be confident because they've rehearsed this and they've gone over it. And, It's an important
powerful
thing to have, and so many people don't have it.
You can go back and forth through this. I mean, anywhere in this book, you could just open up in the middle and learn something. And this is advice for life and certainly advice for young people. This is fantastic. I love this book from my experience with it, at least so far. And I'm really looking forward actually to reading more. Most books I get, once I interview the person, I don't read anymore. I'm actually looking forward to reading more of this. I'm going to leave you, ladies and gentlemen, with this quote by Babe Ruth. He puts in the book, the loudest boos always come from the cheapest seats. The loudest boos come from the cheapest seats. So don't be dissuaded by people's boos or people's, negative comments to you. Go forward, write your goals, get yourself together. I love this book. Brent, Roger Up is the book. Last thought is yours, my friend.
Last thought is just a big thank you. You know, it's no secret I've been doing a 30-day radio tour and promotion of this book, and this is one of my favorite interviews. I'm not just saying that, and you're a great host, and I love this long format. You know, when podcasts came out, it was so refreshing because you would see a guy or a gal on Letterman or Jay Leno or Conan, and it was all fluff. It was 3 or 4 minutes of fluff and softball questions. We actually had context here. I learned some really cool things about you, and I hope your listening audience was able to take a few things away. And I just want to say thank you so much for the time, and I tremendously appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and meet your audience.
Well, there you go. Well, God bless you. Stay right there, Brent. Roger Up is the book. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great weekend. Happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intends you.
Your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8 ounce bottles, and Living Stream's probiotics comes with a money back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Stream's probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Stream's probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.